Welcome, members and guests, to the July 25th program of the City Club of Eugene. Greetings to our broadcast audiences on community television and to our newest members, Marcia Nee and Rebecca Welton. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Our program today is What's Up with the WIT. I'm Marlene Nesri, City Club President for 2014 and 15. A special thank you to KLCC Radio for airing these programs at 6:30 on Monday nights and for archiving the broadcasts on their website. Our sponsors today are Evans, Elder & Brown, Eugene Commercial Real Estate, Eugene Legal, Small Firm, Big Results, and PacInfo Internet Solutions. And for supplying our office space, we thank KPFF Consulting Engineers. A quick reminder that these programs are free for a listening audience, but the programs do cost money to produce and take a lot of volunteer effort. Your membership dues and tax-deductible contributions are most welcome. And for our KLCC listening audience, please consider becoming a virtual member. Virtual members can join for just $40 per year and submit their questions in advance of programs. Virtual members help keep the radio programs and archives on KLCC and support civic education even when they can't attend in person. Find out more about this program on our website at cityclubofeugene.org. Our program today focuses on the Whitaker, which, after many years as one of Eugene's poorest and funkiest neighborhoods, is experiencing a spurt of growth and development. New breweries, wineries, and restaurants bring new challenges to those who live and work there. What are the benefits and burdens of the WIT's rapid transformation? Here to introduce three neighborhood leaders and their perspectives is the coordinator of today's program, Joel Corin. Please join me in welcoming them.
Good afternoon. Next week on Saturday is the Whitaker Block Party. If you've never been there, I strongly recommend you go. It's a fun afternoon, a fun evening, food, music, arts, crafts, a good time. And it'll give you a chance yourself, if you haven't been down to the WIT recently, to see what is going on. As Marlene said, new breweries, new wineries, new restaurants are all part of the scene in the WIT. But like in many places, growth comes with some issues, with some problems. We've assembled a team of three people who are very active in the Whitaker, working and living there. The first is Nikos Ridge, President, CEO of Ninkasi Brewery. He will speak on what Ninkasi is doing and the industrial aspect of growth in the WIT. Carrie Johnson is a longtime resident of the WIT, an artist, a muralist, and has been active in the Whitaker Community Council in the past and presently, and she will speak on her perspective of what's going on in the WIT, what needs to be done, and what should be done. And finally, Sam Hahn, who is the owner or co-owner of Blair Alley, an entertainment venue in the WIT, and has recently been elected as the chair of the Whitaker Community Council, will speak on what the council is doing and what other folks are doing in the WIT. So I invite them to come up now, and we'll start with Nikos. Thank you.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to be here. Here to talk about the Whitaker, and it's a great neighborhood and a great place to work and a great place to have a business and a great place to live and a great place to hang out. But as mentioned, a lot of those things don't always align in terms of everyone's expectations as stakeholders within the experience. So I grew up in Eugene and am a native who moved away and realized that we have something special here. So I came back to start my business here in Eugene. And I think Eugene is a great place to live, partially because we are very intentional about how we go about changing things. And it doesn't always happen at the fastest pace, but it does happen in an intentional way. And a lot of people have their voices heard and their opinions expressed. And I think that's an important part of why our community here is the way that it is and why we all enjoy it. For us, we moved into the Whitaker 7 years ago. So we started for a year in Springfield, and then we found the opportunity to locate our business in the Whitaker. And at the time that we moved in, it was pretty industrial in the area we were located in. We had some tenants that we shared the space with, and there were some empty lots around us, and not a whole lot of commercial activity in that area. We moved in, and we started a manufacturing company. We make beer. And we've grown pretty dramatically over those 7 years, a lot faster even than we expected, I think a lot faster than the neighborhood anticipated, and maybe faster probably than the city anticipated, because there are some issues that we worked through in terms of scaling our growth and some of the needs around that. So the Whitaker is one of the few mixed-use neighborhoods in Eugene. And I think it has the opportunity to be a very successful example of that, so long as we continue to work together from the commercial side, from the industrial side, and from the neighborhood livability side to come up with solutions to some of the problems that are created by mixing three different uses into one area. Some of the really positive benefits of a mixed-use neighborhood are the opportunities that a lot of our staff have to live and work in the same community. So we have a lot of people that walk to work, bike to work, are able to go home for lunch, who live and work in the community that they then go out and support after work. And I think that that's a great thing. Being centrally located, being in an environment where there's dynamic activity going on all the time between neighborhood residents, between the businesses that are opening there, the restaurants, the bars, and other things going on is a great benefit to us. It allows us to feel included as part of the community instead of being out in just an industrial area surrounded by other industrial businesses. But certainly, that comes with a responsibility. A lot of the things that are issues for the neighborhood, things like parking, things like noise, truck traffic, some of the things that we've created, you know, we're trying to work proactively also to address and come up with solutions around. And I think that that's kind of why we're all here, and this is the continuation of a conversation that's been going on at the neighborhood level for a while. And I feel like we're in a positive place in terms of the dialogue starting to become proactive. You know, at first, I think there's a little bit of reactivity because, you know, everyone has their own agenda and their own orientation towards what they want to see. But now that we're all at the table together and starting to talk about these issues in a real way and starting to come up with solutions to the problems where everyone's goals can be addressed, I think we're in a positive place. And I think we have an example as the Whitaker neighborhood to really set a standard that can be used across our community when these issues arise and these situations come up, in terms of being intentional about how we grow, about how we organize, in terms of how we interact with each other, so that we can build a successful community where everyone feels the benefits of having the other stakeholders as a part of that. So with that, I'll turn it over to Kari.
All right. Well, I'm Kari Johnson. Lived in the Whitaker neighborhood. I guess I don't call it the Whitaker district or the Whit or what all. Just the Whitaker neighborhood, Jefferson neighborhood. It's one of the neighborhoods in Eugene. Lived there since 1990, and paint murals and pretty involved in my neighborhood in a lot of different ways over the years. I'm curious, who is ready for your neighborhood to become the center for drinking for the city of Eugene and visiting people? Raise your hand. Who's ready for your neighborhood to become that? A couple hands? Well, why doesn't everybody raise their hand? What is the connection between alcohol and gentrification? What is gentrification? And how does gentrification affect community? And what is community? People like the idea of community. We're kind of an alienated culture. We like the idea of maybe having some, but what is it? You know, is it the African-American community or the European-American community? I mean, what is a community? Is it just a group of people who are kind of similar? Is a community people who are at Valley River Shopping Center all at the same time? Is a community a suburb where nobody walks? What is it? You know, what is it really? I think a community is a web of relationships, and whether it's in a compost pile between the different organisms, or it's in a tub of yogurt and it's microorganisms. It's kind of these connections between people that make community, and I would also say culture, happen. That's what community is. And it takes a while, and it takes a certain kind of place for that to happen. And unfortunately, it doesn't usually happen. We have a really alienated culture. I mean, half people are on psych meds and just trying to just deal with feeling really isolated, because the form we have chosen for our society is very isolating. And that's just how it is. We all know that, I think. And I'll try to define gentrification. If you don't know much about it, it's not a surprise, because it's hard to find out more about it. I got on the internet and tried to study it a bit, and I've seen it. I mean, basically, it's the gentry taking over a poor neighborhood. So it's people with more money, you know, coming in and displacing people who were there and elsewhere. And its relationship to alcohol is that usually the first thing, or like maybe not the first thing, the first thing's actually involves artists. So I'm part of the first thing, you know. It's like, but the significant thing is the bars. Like if you, the Lower East Side in Manhattan, first it was the bars. I mean, you had like a very, very vital neighborhood. I don't know if anyone knows about the Lower East Side, but all different kind of people and art and culture. It was just what I call just thriving and vital. And then the bars opened up, and then middle class white people come in, and now it pretty much is middle class white people and Starbucks. You know, it starts out kind of funky. There's a point where people say it's a renaissance, and that's the point at which the culture consuming people start outweighing the culture that was there. It's this tipping point. We're also at that tipping point in Whitaker. So it's related to communities affected by gentrification, which is affected by alcohol. People are going elsewhere. So gentrification has a couple aspects to it. One is a social justice issue. So you have one of the oldest neighborhoods, or perhaps the oldest residential neighborhood in Eugene. It's been a low-income neighborhood as long as I know of. It's been, I think, railroad workers first. Anyway, it's always been low-income. And you've got people, you've got older people on a fixed income, you've got people with big families, you've got all sorts of different poor people, disabled people, people of color, people from Mexico. And they are close to transportation, they're close to downtown, they're close to grocery stores. There is a network of safety where people look out for each other that's unlike anywhere else I've seen in Eugene. There's a lot of safety, and there's a lot of quality of living. And those people are being displaced right now pretty fast. People are going to Bethel. People are going to Highway 99 and between 6th and 7th Street. And it's just very much more intense life for these people. But it's all individual, you know? I mean, what's really happening? You just, oh, that person's gone, that person's gone. It's hard to really get a grasp of it, but it's happening fast. Another aspect of gentrification is cultural wealth issue. Whitaker has been the origin of a lot of culture for a long, long time, longer than I've been there. I've talked to some old-timers, and the Growers Market came out of there. NEDCO, Neighborhood Economic Development Corporation, came out of there and has had to move because they help poor people buy houses, but that's not possible anymore in Whitaker. They've moved to Springfield. I was part of the big anarchist movement that happened there. There's a lot going on there. There's like CISCAP there. There's Central Latino there. And also, there's a culture that creates art. You can have art organizations. Those are useful once there are artists. You can have places to play music. That's useful once there are musicians. But there's this culture that happens that, I guess because we don't value those things really and pay people, it happens in a poor neighborhood. And basically, if you have a town that's for the arts and the outdoors, I mean, let's just call it in a little while a town for the outdoors, because we're going to lose a base for culture. And my personal experience there, it's difficult. I mean, I'm a happy person. I've got a big garden, and I got lots of friends, and I have a happy life. But, you know, like if I got divorced, everybody would say, that's terrible. If I lost a family member, people would say, wow, that's very hard. If I lost my whole family, people would say, that's extremely hard. If I lose my whole neighborhood, Just a moment of silence for that. It's just hard. It's hard. Things change. You know, nobody's ever stopped gentrification as far as I know. I've seen it. It's happening in East Austin right now. Like, fifth-generation black neighborhood people have so many social ties, and rich white people are going in, and it's just going. I mean, like, and I could talk about the mechanics of that if people want to ask me about it later, but it's kind of unstoppable. I think that the main thing is to understand what's going on. It really helps me to understand what could possibly maintain some culture in Whitaker and diversity and justice is rent stabilization to limit the number of bars. I think it's fine to produce alcohol. It's been an industrial neighborhood for a long time. But to have bars that seat hundreds and hundreds of people, to have this massive draw into a residential neighborhood is destabilizing. And a lot of things are going on at once. I mean, there's a party. You know, there's a party every day. And it's nice to see people walking around. And it can be very happy that this other thing is also happening. And I guess the main thing is I want people to have some way to understand what they're seeing when in 5 years the funkiness and the, you know, just like what is happening. I want people to understand. So I'm glad to be able to speak about it. And thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sam. I've been a Eugene resident for coming up on 14 years now. I've had ties to the Whitaker pretty much since I got here. I came to town as a musician. Some of my first shows were at Sam Bond's Garage, which sort of started it all down there. I'll get to that in a little bit. But after that, in about 2005 or so, I bought my first home, which was in the Whitaker at 5th and Polk. My wife and I eventually moved into Jefferson West Side, but I still had plenty of stuff going on in the Whitaker. And then about 3 years ago, I started. I met my business partner, Chad Boughton, who was a photographer who had a studio in the Whitaker at 2nd and Blair for darn near 20 years. And he had a couple of vintage arcade machines in his lobby, and it was becoming quite a cool little underground scene, totally not legal in any way, and it was the kind of thing that can really only happen in the Whitaker, and frankly, at this point, it probably can't happen in the Whitaker anymore. But we got together and decided to make a real business out of it, and we did a good job. We opened up on a budget that shouldn't have allowed for us to succeed, and we were only able to succeed because of the Whitaker, because of the technical stuff, the zoning and all that stuff was helpful sometimes. And also the residents themselves saw a business that was fun, that was local, that was born organically in the WIT, and everybody pitched in. And we had a whole neighborhood full of folks willing to help us open. And then when we did open, you know, coming in, buying, you know, whatever they could to help us so we can make payroll those first couple weeks. And long story short, with the Blair Alley Arcade, we're a success because of what the Whitaker did for us. And consequently, we make very specific intention to cater to our neighborhood, to the people that can walk to our place. And we've had a really good time. And for the most part, I believe it's been a positive addition to the neighborhood. My feeling about that has changed slightly in the last 4 or 5 months. In April, I was elected as chair of the WCC, the Whitaker Community Council. And I can talk a little bit more about the WCC specifically in a bit, but it gave me a perspective I didn't have, and I think it's a perspective that a lot of people who are either interested in the Whitaker, interested in investing in the Whitaker, there's a lot of stuff that people aren't seeing. And you can turn off of 6th Avenue onto Blair and drive down from 6th to 2nd Avenue, and see 15 new businesses in the last 4 or 5 years or so, and it looks pretty cool. You know, it looks really interesting. They're painted funky. Kari's mural is the one in that parking lot where the food carts are now. And these, for the most part, are really wonderful, unique, fun, small businesses that exist because at the time that people were starting to get into these places, it was pretty reasonable. And so you didn't have to have $1 million to start a business. You know, my business is a perfect example. I mean, we opened for peanuts, and that opportunity, unfortunately, isn't really there anymore. There's just too much hype. There's just too much intensity surrounding the area. And my landlords, some of you may know them, Barbara and Alan Pierce. Pierce Irrigation laid the irrigation for most of Eugene and Springfield in the 1920s through the 50s or so. Al, one of my landlords, his father built the building that my arcade is in. They go out of their way to make a very specific intention to keep the artists. They have 6 beautiful artist studios on the north side of their building, and they've had ample opportunity to sell for industry or sell for you know, another bar like mine to move in, or a brewery, or I'm sure they may have had an opportunity to sell to Nikos and Ninkasi or some of the other breweries, and didn't, because they didn't want to change what's special about the Whitaker right now, which is, I think, more than any single thing that Kari mentioned, what I think is special about it is art. And the art speaks to a lot of different aspects of what the Whitaker has been, what it is now, and hopefully what it can continue to be. You guys may not know this, but being an artist is not a terribly lucrative profession. It works out very often, and, you know, some bigger cities were mentioned, Williamsburg and Brooklyn, what's happening in Austin right now, and a few others, where there's these amazing areas that get created by artists, and they live there because it's cheap, and it's crime-ridden, and it's, you know, freight trains running through the middle of your front lawn, and that works because you're left alone to do your art. And then you create, as an artist, your own little world, and you paint some fences, and you get together with other artists and do projects strictly for the love of art. And then all of a sudden, your neighborhood's beautiful and funky and cute. And then, with no bad intent at all, somebody who spent a lot of time working 40, 60, 70 hours a week to make money, who lives in another area, comes down to the neighborhood and says, "Wow, this is funky and cool and awesome. I want to do something down here. And I've saved up enough money that I think I can do it." And they're really excited about doing it and think that it's going to add to the neighborhood and be positive for it. And unfortunately, that story doesn't turn out well. And not because anybody's a bad person or because anybody's trying to, you know, specifically exploit artists or exploit low-income people. It's just because it's an awesome neighborhood and everybody wants to be a part of it. And so what we're trying to work towards on the Whitaker Community Council is to educate the people coming in to the area on that very subject. To educate them about the fact that it's a residential neighborhood, and that despite what the papers want to write and despite what most people know of the Whitaker, we don't look at it as an alcohol tourist destination. We don't want it to be an alcohol tourist destination. There's definitely some benefits. It's really helped clean up the neighborhood. And especially with some of the industry that's come in, Ninkasi in particular, acting responsibly, they have been positive for the neighborhood in many ways. Nikos alluded earlier that there's, you know, now finally some dialogue going about some of the negatives that the industry has created, with them, the other two breweries, the few other wineries, and now 2 distilleries. There's starting to be some dialogue going, and we're going to be working together to fix some of these issues. And I think it's possible. And while I hear loud and clear what Kari was saying about that it's pretty unstoppable. At least in the case of the Whitaker, right now, I disagree. And I think we have a couple of advantages that some areas like Williamsburg or Austin didn't have. And that is, number one, the size. It's still a really small town. These conversations that I have with people, the one that we're having right now, it does get around. I'm hoping that it you know, encourages a few of you to, you know, either behave a little better down there or make somebody that you're, you know, if you're having a conversation with somebody that might be opening up a business, really get them to stop and consider why they might want to be doing it and whether or not it's really going to contribute to the neighborhood being preserved in the way that it is right now. And that's our main goal. The other part of it, too, is that there's a few things about the Whitaker that are never going to go away. The mission is never going to go away. And it's, in many ways, a positive thing for at least humanity, that there's places for folks who don't have a place to sleep to go sleep. On the other hand, it creates a lot of problems. And we got a lot of people stealing bikes, being drunk, being foolish, that make it a little bit less attractive for Starbucks or Whole Foods to move in. So, kind of cool, kind of not. There's that. There's also the train tracks. The train tracks are really loud, incredibly invasive, and again, not where I'd want to open up my Starbucks. So the hope is that through promotion of what the residents of the Whitaker want, that the little sweet spot that we're in right now, where everything's still pretty affordable. There has been some displacement, but not a huge amount, at least compared to some other areas that have gone through this. But that through promotion of the residents' desires, some help from the industries, some help from the businesses, that we can preserve our little area and keep it cool for everybody to come visit, as long as we all, you know, work together to spread the good word that it's not Bourbon Street. It's not, you know, it's not Greenwich Village. It's the Whitaker. And come say hello, but after that, let us be.
Thank you to our panelists. Now it's time for us to break so that members can form questions for the panelists. Thank you.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, KMPQ Roseburg. We're on the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet. This is KLCC, NPR for Oregonians.
Back to the July 25th City Club program, What's Up in the WIT. Our guest speakers are Nikos Ridge, Kerry Johnson, and Sam Hahn. So we'll go to your questions now.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. My interest is in the leadership that Whitaker gives to the rest of the business community in Eugene. We are aware of the fine policies you have in Nakasi for the employees there, and that serves as a nice example of what businesses should be doing in the community, I think. We have a big issue right now on the paid sick leave issue that the City Council is dealing with. Could you comment on this about what kind of influence the businesses in the community have toward the in the Whitaker have to the rest of the community, particularly in Nakasi? Thank you.
Sure. This is Nikos from Nakasi Brewing Company. I mean, being a business in Eugene and being a business in the Whitaker, I think it's our responsibility to try to set a high standard so that you know, we can continue to grow as a community. So in terms of specifically some of the things we do, I mean, I think the brewing industry has a lot of positives in terms of the types of jobs it is, the type of industry it is. It doesn't really pollute very much. It creates good skilled labor, manufacturing jobs, good wages. You know, we offer good benefits and try to build a strong team and community within the brewery. And I think you know, raising the bar means it's got to go up for everyone because we're all drawn from the same pool and we're lucky to have an amazing group of talented people. And I think to compete with our ability to get talented people to work for us, other people have to do the same. And so I think it does just naturally create this environment where, you know, positive outcomes occur from people doing the right thing. I think specifically some of the other things that we're working on in terms of being a positive role model for other businesses are working with the community and with some of the other breweries and with advocates from Lane County Public Health to work on strategies to reduce the impacts of alcohol, reduce the livability impacts in our neighborhood. And then as a group of breweries, we're working to spread that out to some of the other businesses in the neighborhood to try to do some positive norming and, again, just be proactive in trying to address some of the concerns that people have and work forward in a positive way and ideally spread that through the rest of the neighborhood and community.
I'm Jane Smith, City Club member for a while. Thanks. You really expanded my mind in many different ways. As I listened to you, I suddenly realized that you bear many of the hallmarks that I think people who are concerned about our future and the global climate crisis that we're in are talking about in terms of radically changing our lifestyle, where the measure of success is no longer growth. And part of the secret of that is caring about each other, that is, being relationship high, tolerating diversity, and you've got diverse kinds of people, but you have industry mixed with manufacturing and retail and wholesale, the whole bit. And you seem to be able to make a satisfying culture out of it. How do you stop the gentrification, that is, turning yourself inside out to be like us? We just had the experience of a broken water main that affected 75 houses, so EWEB was telling us when we could use our water and when we couldn't. And we had the funniest sensation of no longer owning where we lived, being we were totally uncertain that we were calling the shots. We, you know, sort of, and we've always thought that, but here was the reality. You seem to have bought some autonomy that the rest of us think we have, but we don't really have. When you show up en masse at City Council, they listen to you. How long can that last? So can you paint a future other than the gentrification for the benefit of the rest of us?
I'm Sam Hahn from the WCC. I think that the autonomy is probably not. It may be just as much of an illusion as it was for your situation there with EWEB. The way to, I guess, you know, kind of stop it or feel like it's our own, at least as far as the board members on the WCC are concerned, is to fight about it and to stand up and to explore all of the different avenues of you know, legislation or, you know, social aspects, all that stuff, to really just be as involved as we possibly can. This new board is pretty special. It's the biggest board the WCC has had in a while. It's the most diverse board the WCC has had in a while. And consequently, we can, it's a little bit easier for us to gain some neighborhood-wide support for different things that we want to either preserve or prevent or whatever. The problem that I found in the last few years, or last few months, sorry, is that there's a lot of people who live there who have lived there for 20 years and don't want to, 20 years later, now have to stand up and fight for what's been theirs for 20 years. And they shouldn't have to, you know, and there's, I don't have a solution for them, and I don't you know, I have nothing to offer other than that on their behalf, you know, the WCC will be fighting for what they want and what they want to preserve. I'm not sure if that answered your question, but that's the best I got for now.
Janet Calvert, City Club member. At our table, we were thinking of all the issues raised. One that occurred to some of us was that the Whitaker Elementary School is no longer an elementary school, and the children there go to, I believe, River Road now. Do you have any reflection on how this may have changed the incentive for people to move there or to move away? Or has the school issue been anything that has come up in the community groups or other discussions about maintaining Whitaker as a neighborhood?
Kari Johnson. We talked about this in the community council a while back, quite a few years ago, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And a development company wanted to buy the school and make it into condos. And a lot of the neighborhood showed up and said, we don't want that to happen. We want to have a school. It's made to be a school, and we need some place for the kids to go. And not everybody's really interested in sending their kids to school on a bus way out to the edges of town into a giant school. But with this, and with a lot of this subject, it's about economics, and it's about our values, and you know, the economy can be kind of a machine, and a lot of what fuels this town is growth on the edges of town. That's like where the real estate is. That's where the construction companies make their money. You know, you keep wanting to push the edge of the town, and you want to put the big schools out there, the big giant schools, and close all the schools in town and make them into condos. I mean, that's just what makes money. So it's really hard when something makes money to do something different. But if we want something different, we're going to have to do something different.
Susan Conley, City Club meeting member. Thank you all so much for coming. We really appreciate it. I have a friend who bought a house in the Witt a few years ago, and she has told me that inebriated people very loudly travel between these bars, and it's really, really disrupting, she feels, to the community. So my question is are there any ways that this can be curtailed through zoning, OLCC, anything like that that you folks have taken a look at?
I can speak from our perspective. You know, we hold a unique distinction of, in one hand, you know, being sort of tasked with gentrifying the neighborhood, and on the other side, decreasing its livability. So it's a sort of a odd sort of middle position. But in terms of the drinking and the behavior around that, I think we're trying to be proactive. I don't know as much on the legislative side, and I don't know that anyone is really at the point where that seems like it's the next step. I think at first we're trying to create some positive behavioral changes, put up some signs, educate people about the fact that they're in a neighborhood, educate people about the fact that it's a place where people live, try to communicate amongst the different bars and businesses there about, you know, what's appropriate. We try not to be too oriented as a group of breweries towards, you know, creating a, you know, come to tour every brewery and come to the neighborhood and you know, walk around and drink all day. So I think from our perspective, the first step is really to try to come up with solutions where we can sort of guide the behavior in a more appropriate way. And then from there, I'm not sure about next steps, but say my number on that.
This is a huge issue. This is what a good portion of the council meetings are about. It's like a 700-word task force. I can't remember the name of it. The
Whitaker Brewery. Yeah.
Whitaker Brewery, Eugene Lane County Health Organization, Alcohol Prevention Task Force, something like that. they're working on it. And from what I understand, that's a group of basically all the breweries down there and then a few Whitaker residents, again, trying to educate about just finding a way to reach every customer that comes down for the twice a year that they come to the area that, you know, again, yeah, it isn't the place to just go get wasted. that said, one of the biggest issues that we face as far as the rapid growth that has taken place in the last 5 or 6 years and sort of the fallout from that is that there's absolutely no place to park. And what that contributes to, as you know, as far as the residents are concerned, is I can't remember the words. The lady who asked the question, these inebriated people walking through the neighborhood, where there really should be no reason for them to be walking through the neighborhood. They shouldn't be parked on a residential street in front of someone's house, taking their last leak before they jump in their car and drive home. Obviously it sounds funny, but I mean, it's disgusting. And I dealt with it when I lived on Fifth Avenue before a lot of this started. And we have members on the board who face it every single weekend. And it's the inebriation causes foolishness like parking in front of people's driveways, defecating on people's lawns, passing out on people's lawns, starting fights. And then, you know, if it was downtown, the way that that's dealt with is to call the police. The Whitaker neighborhood has sometimes a fortunate, lately unfortunate habit of not calling the police. And so there isn't a huge presence down there to deal with this and, you know, fine enough people that eventually people start thinking twice. So the reason I mentioned the parking is that, you know, like I said, if you drive down Blair between 6th and 2nd, you know, there's a whole bunch of new businesses, about half of them serve alcohol. And if we can get them to park on Blair, or at least in parking lots surrounding Blair, hopefully that will reduce the impact that, you know, some of the drinkers have on the neighborhood. And it isn't, you know, the breweries get a bad rap for it, Ninkasi in particular. I mean, they're closed at 10. It's not people strolling on lawns freaking out at 10 o'clock in the evening. It's 3 in the morning. Folks, unfortunately, getting out of my place or getting out of Sam Bond's or Tiny's or some of the other bars down there. If we can find a place for them to park, we're hoping that that's going to limit some of the impact.
Corey Johnson, I would really like it if that drunk wagon of yours did not go by my house, just, you know, personally. I think a lot of neighbors feel like that. There's this wagon thing that you can get on a bike, and there's like a overseer who's like, go ahead, scream, scream. And every day it's like, woo, woo, woo. And I'm always worried. Like, it sounds like someone's getting hurt or something. You know, it's like, oh, right, it's the drunk wagon. And it goes by my house. And it doesn't go further down forth by the mayor's house. And I think you should start at Blair and then go down down past the mayor's house and make a little loop over there.
I think opportunity here is we actually have nothing to do with that.
Bar bike. It's Ninkasi on this side.
Yeah, like they have a sticker of
I'm
ours.
I'm just saying, but they're I would prefer if that.
Yes, but
anyone can stop that wagon.
Yes.
Well, I'm James Baldock, City Club member since 2012, and a Whitaker resident just as long. Actually, my question's rather timely. I'm kind of curious, what's a good concrete example where you feel the WCC, the Whitaker Community Council, negotiated with businesses or other stakeholders and really accomplished something that you're proud of that was better and optimal, more optimal solution than if it wasn't around?
Thank you for the question. The new board was formed rather recently. We've been at a few different issues for 4 or 5 months now. We have a couple of 25% successes. I guess one good thing that we did that wasn't executed nearly as well as it could have been, there was the Degenerate Flame Off, which is an event that Cornerstone Glass puts on that at this point is an international event. There's people coming in from all over the world to compete in. Is it a competition or just a showcase? Yes. Competition and just the glass blowing all-star game, basically. We were really concerned about the parking issue, and just through connecting the dots through a few different people, we managed to identify a huge acre and a half large empty grass field over on Railroad in North Polk. And we organized a scenario in which we got up too few signs, unfortunately, pointing people in that direction, worked with DFO to promote that as a parking lot, all of this with about 6 or 7 days' notice. We had Whitaker Community Council volunteers in there collecting donations while they were parking in the slot. So we, you know, got some people from circling all the neighborhoods like fools for 2 hours looking for a parking lot and managed to raise some money, and all that's going to go towards eventually buying a parking lot. Another one of my one of the coolest things that I think we'd done was actually our last general meeting. Nikos was invited down to sort of squash the disconnect between a lot of the industry and the businesses and such that have come up and the residents. It's a small town. Rumors get started. Ideas get blown out of proportion. Lines get drawn in the sand. And none of that stuff is good for anyone. And so last week's or 2 weeks ago's meeting was awesome. He stood up there and answered some tough questions, and residents got to hear the truth and either lower or heighten their anxiety, depending upon how they felt about the answer. But communication is going to be the number one most important thing in preserving our little sweet spot right now. And we totally got that going last week, and it was great.
Hi, Jerry Smith, City Club member since 2003. The Eugene Mission in the Whitaker area is the only large shelter for homeless people in Eugene. It is overwhelmed by the huge number of people in our town with no jobs and no income. How can Eugene develop supports and shelter for the poor so they won't burden the Whitaker neighborhood?
So they won't burden the Whitaker.
Ooh, yes. I would like to address that. Kari Johnson. That was something that we talked about a lot when I was chair of the council. We ended up having some homeless forums because three homeless people had been killed, and we wanted to talk about homeless safety. And so we had the mayor come down and the chief of police and some city liaison fellow, and we had kind of like a council about it. And we talked about the homeless and the mission, and we had a few meetings. And we ended up coming up with this idea that is actually pretty much the most practical and popular idea going so far, which is having the most cost-efficient thing has been the car camping. That's where the St. Vincent de Paul is a liaison person, and so each church can have a certain number of car camp people. And so people are coming up with the idea of a 30-person maximum sort of camping spot. And people tried a while back, years back, at Autzen Stadium to have a car camp. I don't know if people remember that, but it was hundreds of people. And then when you get such a big group, you lose control of it. People gain control of it. People start running it, you know? And that's not good. It gets to be a little mafia-type thing. So 30 people, and then all over town, we could have these people calling them rest stops. And it's really low impact, and you end up having a little community, and you've got some safety, and you can start, looking for a job or have a place for your kids maybe. That's a big problem with being homeless, is the state wants to take your kids away. So that seems like, and that came out of the council. It's
practical. Currently there's, that's actually kind of a hot topic. The same parking lot I was talking about, or empty lot that we used for the DFO parking event, was recently just leased to a group, pretty sure it's called Nightingale Health Sanctuary. And boy, it's tricky. I found the last part of your question interesting as to how do we solve this problem without impacting the Whitaker. The folks who run Nightingale, rightfully so, I don't think really care where it is. They just want to help, and here's an opportunity where they have a lot to do it. As a resident of the residents of the Whitaker, in many cases, are pretty darn tired of it. There actually is an ordinance that states that that the social services, these type of social services, are supposed to be equally spread out amongst the seven wards in Eugene, and I think about 80% of them are in the Whitaker. And now they're asking for another one. And so, I don't have an answer to your question as to how do we limit that from impacting the Whitaker. I think that the folks who are doing the Nightingale thing have some pretty good intentions. I'd be really curious to see if it actually does lessen the impact of homelessness on the Whitaker. You know, does adding social services help the problem or create more problem? The jury's still out, I guess.
I'm Robin Fletcher, and I'm a City Club member since 2004 and a Whitaker resident since 1990. So, but that's beside the point, because Mark, our question is really more about the public sector and the Whitaker, and what can the public sector, what would be the best thing for the public sector to do to help us keep the, to support the Whitaker neighborhood as it is? Ideas, housing, culture, transportation, transit. What do you think?
Are you asking someone in particular?
No. That's an open question to any of you, all of you.
Well, I got some opinions about that. This is Kari. I think that the public sector could encourage bicycling to Whitaker. I mean, we're going to have drunk driving deaths. It's just statistical fact. You know, you have that many people driving to drink, someone's going to hurt somebody. And besides, we have all the problems with parking. And if there was, it would be pretty cheap and pretty easy to make a big move to encourage people to bicycle. And that could improve the situation hugely, hugely for everybody, you know, all the individuals, the group. I mentioned rent stabilization. I know it's not a socialist country or anything, and this is kind of seems like crazy. Everyone should be able to make their own money and charge as much as they possibly can all the time for everything. But, you know, if there was some way to stabilize the rents, people wouldn't be dispersed. We'd still have, you know, the relationships and the connection that make that place what it is. We could limit the bars. You know, I don't know how much of your profit comes from the bar, but it's giant. But you have this, you know, production that could still happen, and maybe not, you know, maybe it could be more industrial. Maybe it could just be just the production of the alcohol and a few bars that serve just the neighborhood. Also, you know, what businesses serve the actual neighborhood? What do we as an actual neighborhood, we're still a neighborhood, need? What do we need? Can we prioritize what the neighborhood might actually need for itself?
I'll jump into just to answer that question as well. I mean, the public sector, I think, has an opportunity to look at the Whitaker, how it's evolving, and probably learn a few things from what's happening down there, and hopefully use some of those things to move forward positively so that some of the issues can be avoided in the future. But I do think that there were some big decisions made when the Whitaker special use zoning was created and allowed for commercial, industrial, residential to coexist. And I think what we're seeing down there now, I mean, there are these, you were here to talk about some of the difficulties in growth and how interfacing all those things together can create problems. But I think ultimately, if you look at what's happened, Whitaker has sort of revitalized itself with a lot of people coming down there, a lot of people who live in the neighborhood opening businesses in the neighborhood, a lot of jobs being created down there, a lot of people are able to live and work in the community. And I think that there's a lot of really good things that are happening there as well. I think there's challenges that we're going to need to work through. But I think if we take a look at it, learn, you know, what went wrong, how we can avoid that in the future, but also see what's going right and how is it working. I think that would be a great approach.
I think just spreading the good word is kind of the best thing we can do. Is, yeah, the Whitaker's awesome, and make sure you go down and respect it. And one thing that I'm trying to like kill is the people referring to the Whitaker as the fermentation district. Or the brewery district or whatever it is. And so, yeah, as the public sector, that's definitely something you can do, and you can hear somebody talk about it like it's this cool thing where you want to bring the mom-in-law when they come into town, and here's the fermentation district. From a morale standpoint for the people who live there, it's a really depressing term. I used the analogy the other day of, like, walking over to my friend's house and getting along well with his kid and saying, yeah, this is Sam's house now. you know, doesn't work like that. It's the Whitaker neighborhood, and it's, you know, it belongs to the people that live there and pay taxes there, who is also the breweries and the wineries and the distilleries also. That's a damaging term, I feel, because it just sets an idea in your mind that, okay, this is the place to go down and get trash, which isn't what we're trying to promote. Also, the public sector can definitely contribute. We're going to be starting some pretty serious fundraising efforts to buy a parking lot of our own. The city doesn't really seem to have the resources to supply the Whitaker with a parking solution the way that it may have for the downtown area and some other stuff. And so, screw it, we're going to do it ourselves. And so when those opportunities arise, open up your wallets and tell your friends to open up their wallets, and that'll be helpful.
Lou Powell, a City Club member. At the beginning of the program, we got a shout out from Joel for the Whitaker Block Party. Then we spent the next hour talking about the problems with people and alcohol. My question is, what controls have you put in place for the Block Party to try to minimize that?
I don't want to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. There's a lot, and in fact, we aren't even putting that much into it, but the EPD is taking it upon themselves to take care of that all on their own and bill us for it afterwards. The Whitaker Block Party is a big challenge. There's, in my opinion, just kind of the soundbite, I think it's the actual Eugene celebration. I work at Lucky's still downtown, and we've been right in the middle of the footprint for the Eugene celebration in the past. The way that it's run, the event that it is, what it promotes, who it benefits, to me doesn't really say anything about Eugene anymore, with the exception of the parade and the Slug Queen piece of it. Eugene celebration has nothing for me. Versus the Whitaker Block Party, in many ways, really is celebrating Eugene. It's almost entirely local bands, local artists, local booths. And up until recently, it was right on a residential street that was, you know, that funky street that a lot of people have driven down with all the crazy painted houses and all that. And it has become such an awesome event that it has gotten a little out of control. And as far as preventing sort of the invasiveness of that one night, the city is definitely requiring a large police presence down there. I think there's been some intention made by the folks who run Whitaker Block Party to actually shrink it a little bit. I think they feel that it got a little bit too big, and it did. You know, it is a residential street, and there's just wasn't room for that many people. And I think the inner workings of it changed enough that if it does continue over the next few years, I think it's going to shrink down to a much more manageable size. But no matter what, it is a giant festival on one day in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and it's going to have impact. And so the number one thing about Block Party, not every weekend, but just Block Party, is about communication. And the folks that are really affected by it need to be heard. Block Party and the businesses that benefit from Block Party need to help mitigate the impact on those, you know, few residents. So.
Marlene Nesri, City Club member. Just one quick question for each of you. How has the new skate park impacted your lives on a daily basis?
This is Nikos from Nikasi. We haven't seen any direct impacts to us from that. I mean, we were in support of it. I think it's pretty cool that Eugene has one of the best skate parks in the country, and I think it's done a lot for the area down there in terms of adding life back to that section of the park. But directly, we don't see a lot of impacts other than thinking it's a positive thing.
Kari? I hear more of this sound. And it seems like a great thing so far. I mean, it's a place for people who are the age that there's not much opportunity for them. They have a place to go and really get their energy out and you know, kind of wrangle with their own. It's a huge sport, and the people can really, I don't know, I'm not being very articulate. They can really get a lot of energy out. I think it's really important when people are young like that to have some place to play and to be together, and it's, I think it's open till 11. It's just fantastic. I think it's going to be really nice in the winter when it gets dark at 3 or 4, and they've got a lit, dry place to play for a long time. And the way it was designed is, I think, real beautiful. And so they're more skateboarders. It seems pretty positive.
I think it's great. With the exception of like the 30 plus friends that I have that now have some broken limb or another, trying to revisit their skating days from when they were 16. Like, I think I can still do it. Let's give this a try. But that's mostly been funny. So yes, it's at least entertaining for me. I think that the WCC definitely takes pride in it. You know, when we talk about it, it's an asset that we now have. Another thing that makes us the coolest neighborhood in the country, as far as I'm concerned. It's fantastic. I wish that we would utilize it more. You know, that the community would promote it more, and keeping kids under something and getting rid of energy is great. I think that I personally am going to make efforts to revitalize the horseshoe throwing scene. Since there is 25 horseshoe courts down there, nobody ever plays. Horseshoes, anyone? Come on. Let's do this. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for bringing clarity and vision to this City Club program, What's Up in the WIT. And thanks again to our sponsors, Evans, Elder & Brown, Eugene Legal, and PAC Info. This concludes our programming year. We meet again after the August pause on Friday, September the 5th, at the Downtown Athletic Club. Please check our website to see what's coming up this fall. Thanks so much.